tape two of the afternoon of January the 26th. Dave, you have a question?
Yes, well, were the seeds of seeking a republican as an environment, as a new form of government, present in all those people that were here and coming here? And weren't they trying to get out of this so-called blanket of a monarchy over them?
No, I don't think that's true. I think they were loyal as they could be to the British monarchy, and that they came over hoping that they could improve their condition both physically and financially. But when it came to the point where the attitude of the British government of the time was to exploit the colonies, then they got together and figured out this idea of a republic through the Continental Congress, which began to meet in 1773, I think. And that situation was developing in France also, which finally wound up in the French Revolution after the American Revolution took place.
Well, that revolution, in a sense, was in the air, not only in Europe, but here too.
Well, the exploitation of the everyday man in Britain, France, and Spain was fundamentally the cause of the whole reawakening of free government in the world, I think.
Reawakening, I'd like to have
a question. Well, in using the word reawakening, you also mean that there was a new conception of what belonged to men, and a new conception of what they ought to enjoy.
Well, yes, but I think you find that in the Roman Republic that had been the conception to begin with. And that down through the ages, the success of that Roman Republic, which after it became the Roman Empire, was such that people got to take it for granted that that would continue forever. And the breaking up of the Roman Empire and the creation of these small kingdoms and empires after that brought about the tyranny, which in the end wound up with the American and the French Revolutions and brought freedom back to the individual. That's all there was in Kentucky, in my opinion.
Well, Mr. President, what is it under the Roman Republic then was good, which you saw?
Well, the Roman Republic was made up, of course, they had two classes of people in the Roman Republic, which we don't have in our time, but their objective of the Roman Republic was the greatest honor that could come to a man was to be a Roman citizen, that is, a citizen of the city of Rome. And they then were willing to fight for the freedom of the city of Rome, and the individual at that time had, no matter whether he was a slave or whether he wasn't, he had his right under the law to make his appearance and get justice. And it took a long time for that to work into the point where the Romans, after they conquered the whole world, became fat and easy going, and the empire then was broken up from the outside, not from the inside. It wasn't broken up by any revolution on the inside. It was broken up by the Goths and the Ostrogoths and the, all those Avalon, all the rest of them. Teutons, and it was savages that broke the Roman Empire up, and I guess it had come to the end of its life, of its condition anyway. And the Eastern Empire was broken up by the Turks, who came from Central Asia.
Well, but you're suggesting, Mr. President, that no study of American history, I'm using American history for the United States, no study of American history can really begin without some consideration of some of those goods in the sense of freedom which existed under the Roman Republic.
I think that's correct. I think
that's great.
And there's no way in the world to arrive at a conclusion of the reasons for the setup of the American government and the way in which it was set up without a study of the history of government long before that, and the time of the judges in Israel, time of the Turkish Empire, which was set up after the Roman Empire became destroyed, you find that there was an idea, and still is an idea in all those countries, of justice for the welfare and benefit of the individual.
Well, that's also obtained in the Hellenic
in the Greek city-states, that was true, except that the Greek city-states believed that there were two classes of people. for those who didn't have to work and those who did. They had slaves, and they had an ideal on how government, on how government ought to be set up. It ought to be set up. And you take your statements of Plato and Socrates, always with the idea that the individual had his rights. But they believed that there was a certain set of individuals who didn't have any rights, and we didn't have that. We never have had that except until after we got to have it.
What about the Romans?
The same ideas, exactly. They taste.
That was an extension of the Greek civilization.
That's right.
So that the seeds of equality and quality and status and recognition were both planted in the Greek and the Roman civilization.
Yes, but the fundamental basis for a just government, in my opinion, originated in the Mesopotamian or the Greek, and then long before came into Roman empires came into existence within the last 50 years of Hammurabi. You very laws he set out just what the fundamental 3,500 years ago. And they just discovered those.
The Mesopotamians by art.
They were Persians. Part of the Semitic race.
Was their religion?
They had Esther was their main religion, and came in contact with to do what should be done by the supremacy of all government and religion.
Now, under this setup, the individual, no matter who he was, had equal status with everyone.
He did in the Mesopotamian empires, that is, the Babylonian and Nineveh empires. The individual had his rights the same as everybody else, although they believed in slavery. And they conquered a country and made slaves out of them. But the individuals under the government of those two great cities were in parallel with those. That's where the Greeks is.
But in the Mesopotamia was a classless society, accepting.
No, it wasn't the class. They had nobles. They had nobles and people who were in charge of the government. And then in all these countries, Egypt and Mesopotamia and all the rest of them, they had a priesthood who really ran things. And that usually came to a violent end, as all the priesthood governments did.
What you're suggesting then, by referring to the tables or tablets of Hammurabi, that they began a notation of laws.
Yes, you find in that codification of Hammurabi. Which property and the right of his own life as he went, the individual to have his own life as he went along. It's the most interesting thing. I've forgotten once in a while, but spent some time.
The original things are developed free society. But in fact, this link up with the point you made about peace was always leading to ultimate disaster.
That's right.
Concept there is freedom of the separation of such a basic church and state, which was such a basic church and state, which was basic
fundamental in our constitution. Fundamental, that's right. In all the history of governments by control, they always came out of that. They always came out of that. Religious hierarchy. They always came to a bad end.
You've got to go back again for the minute to say that Protestantism, has for the future as far as this country is concerned.
That's had an effect on the people who are in fact know all about it. For men on the heaven again.
Separation of church and so on. Act one isolated sector, the sub isolated.
this, in a sense, became a government like no other government had ever existed.
That's true. That's reasons for its situation. Individually, or a unique situation, I might say, is that the power of the executive, the power of the judicial, were separated, and that's unusual. And you find in the history, unusual, centered in one man.
In other words, the
Didn't have 12 tables of the law, basis on which the judicial part of the Roman, Roman Republic worked, an approach to it. Definitely, like the government of the United States, which was the men who understood all we've been discussing here.
Now, this government represents a refinement, evolve a new system which would take the good out of all the mistakes and improve on the situation from the situation.
You mean result rather than refinement. The thought there was an attempt to get all of it. It was thought to bring fine result of, and it was thought all the best of it.
Well, arrangement. So that had been made in the other governments about which you've been talking, and so far we've been able to.
You would say that this was a success time in human history, Republican form of government with the people's democratic government
democracy. And representative government is not government, is a representation of powers in such a way no single man could take dictatorship out of the country.
Why did the man alone? Were the individual freedom,
and make a dictatorship out of the country then?
Why the democracy, meaning the the individual equality under the law, that kind of thing.
That's right.
Equality under the law.
And the democracy has been, the word democracy has been ruined by the dictatorships by claiming that their democracy isn't, and hasn't been a democracy since the Greeks.
And would you say that terms like democracy apply to our form of government?
Republic applies perfectly to our form. A government means a limitation. And that's what we are, government by representation, under a constitution of the three branches of the government, of what they're intended to be, judicial, executive, and legislative.
That's the end of tape two, the afternoon, this is tape three, the afternoon of January 26th. We're going over material for the introductory chapter, or the beginning of the book.
Chapters. Mr. President, is there any flexibility that's inherent in the system as it's set up to give it immunity against any and all future developments in the freedom of government?
Yes, I think that exists in the Constitution itself, because it provides for its own amendment when it becomes comes to a point where it won't work under certain conditions. Well, then you have a right to amend it, but it's hedged about in such a way that it can't be made a legislative document. That's the great thing about it. It is not a legislative document, it's a constitutional document.
May I just go back a little bit and ask again whether, in your judgment, that the political education that our colonials had, or colonists, from the 1776 or thereabouts, was that the education that conditioned them to the self-discipline and the other things that involved in government?
Well, there is any doubt about it, because most of them had royal governors appointed by the British Crown, and they had legislatures which acted on tax matters and things of that sort. And they, through all the 100 or 150 years in which they were operating, they became very well experienced in how to operate a local government for a colony. Those colonies in those days, some of them didn't have the population that the county has now, but the objective that they were attaining was to see that the government was for the welfare and benefit of the people, and it was in nearly every instance.
In other words, you had locally self-government pretty well in perfect working order.
Yes, that's true. They had very excellent colonial governments in all the colonies, and those colonies were operated along the same lines as far as government was concerned, which was made it possible for the institution of the Continental Congress when the colonies decided that they didn't any longer want to be tied up to the British Crown.
Well, we're talking about British colonies now, Mr. President. Why is it that the other colonies, the colonies set up by other nationalities, didn't have the advance achievement of these?
Because they were not allowed to have a hand in their government. You find that most of the other countries in Spain, they appointed colonials with absolute power under the crown, and the people were not represented at all in that government.
What you're saying is that under the British colonial system, despite the fact that there was a revolt because there wasn't sufficient representation, there was nevertheless representation and participation
in the local government entirely. That's true.
Was that an innovation in the British handling of colonials, treatment of colonials?
I don't know whether it's an innovation or not, because I think these were the first colonies, that the British ever had. I don't think they had any anywhere else until long after that.
In other words, the growth of the United States comes out of this very fruitful beginning of participation by the local government, of people in the local government.
That's true. It finally wound up in the national government of the United States with the people in complete control of it.
In other words, here we have an example of the most important grassroots in almost.
I think that's true.
Well, you said people having complete control. Did you mean to say that this is the only government where the power, the control of the government resides solely in the people?
It definitely sets that up. It says those powers not delegated in this Constitution remain in the people.
In that sense, any other system now in operation?
I don't know of a system. There are a great many governments that are modeled on the government of the United States, but none of them are exactly like it. It's in a class by itself. And the reason it is in a class by itself is because the people believe in it, they're willing to support it, and they do support it.
Well, instead of being ruled, we're just governed, but we are ruled by the people.
That's right. That's right. There's a difference between being ruled and governed.
Dave, unless you want to follow that tack, I want to get back to something a little bit personal.
All right.
In your approach to American history, while you're writing it. Now, you're certainly not going to attempt in this book to research or any statistical material. You're attempting to do something, that is an interpretation of what happened.
That's the idea. We want to have an interpretation of how the government came about how it grew and how it works today. And in order to do that, we may sometimes have to cite some details to which you refer. But the objective is to get the people, young people coming on to understand what they have to do to keep it.
And you, as a former president, can look back at American history now with a little bit more experienced eye to see what's died, to see what you think is significant.
That's true, because government as well as in national and international government, and if you have some experience, know the history of how the setup of our own government became our own government, and I think in a better position to explain it to the youngsters and tell them what they have.
But you really don't this republic, how it works, and administrative and administrative.
Well, that's the top notch. Well, that's the top notch job in the whole cities. They have the same sort of a setup in most of it. It's all modeled on the late Irish in 1787.
Well, then colonials, the former colonials, the governors, the constitutions, the key organ of the Constitution of the Oregon of the Constitution of the United States, only most of the United States.
Every constitution is right, every state is not admitted to you. That's the provider of the beginning.
So in other words,
before they become states.
Excuse me. In writing this history and addressing it to the young people, you want to give them some of your thinking and your reaction to the past events in the light of what you saw and experienced and what you believe was essential in the whole history.
Oh yes, you've got to know the history of the not only the history as it's been in operation since the adoption of the Constitution, but you must know something about the history which brought it about, and it's one of the most interesting studies that any youngster can follow through on.
And the style you're interested in is a simple style of just talking directly to people so they can understand what you're saying.
That's the objective. That's the
reason.
Get them to understand it. And it's a difficult thing to convey thought. And what we want to do is to put the objective, which is a history of the Constitution and the government of the United States, in such a way that it can be easily understood. And it can be easily understood if it's set out in a way that the ordinary public can understand.
The reason I ask this, Mr. President, is because history originally was considered as a literary effort, whatever the facts were, and what you're interested in is to reveal and to interpret the important facts, and you're not concerned about style.
No, but the objective is to let the youngsters understand that men make history. History don't make men. Men make history by their actions and their efforts to, especially in government, to make government more interesting and more available and easier to understand by the ordinary fellow. And when we do that, then we've accomplished a purpose.
There's one more question. You say that men make history. You also recognize the fact, don't you, that men may be influenced by certain factors in their surroundings, such as economic or religious or moral or other events which influence them and in that turn influences history.
That's true, but the men who wrote the Constitution of the United States made history. Those men wrote the Constitution of the United States and they made history. And the men who set it up, Washington, for instance, as the first president, was able to put that Constitution into effect after it had been adopted by the colonies and the United States became a nation. And those men made history, and I want to impress it on the youngsters that they never can tell when it may be their turn to make history too. History's been made right along in the last 160 or 70 years that the government of the United States has been in effect.
Well, one of the things we heard you express in connection with this project was that you wanted to refresh and re-inspire and revitalize some of these youngsters about some of their precious institutions and precious freedoms, which they've been taking for granted in the last, well, some of them have.
That's true. That's true. I'm trying to prevent the same thing happening in the this great government of ours that happened when the Roman Republic became the Roman Empire and then went to pieces. We don't want that to happen, although it took 1,200 years for that to happen to Rome. We want this to last at least that long.
In other words, Mr. President, when you were saying a few minutes ago in answer to a question of day, what is it that makes this setup in this country almost, I'm using a word he didn't use, but he meant timeless, in that it, you're able to preserve it. What you're doing is, in effect, saying you want to point out that it cannot be timeless or end for, last forever unless they watch out and guard against it.
Oh, yes. It requires constant watchfulness to preserve liberty. And the Constitution is set up for the purpose of preserving the liberty of the individual. And when we cease to understand that that's the case, and let things run and take care of themselves, then we're in trouble. It takes leadership all the way through under any republic or any sort of a government to make it work.
In other words, that's not an old, outworn colonial slogan or latest slogan that
no.
You've got to be wary and watchful to preserve liberty.
That's correct. It has to go on all the time.
Well, but you've also been saying that there's nothing that's in the interest of the improvement or the advancement of the lot of people that isn't attainable under the Constitution.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And it's been conclusively proven by the way our country has run along and the way everybody has an opportunity at some time or other to better himself. That's the objective in the long run.
That's why we have no problem of renewal. This is a constantly evolving society. That we
continuing thing, and if one understand what they have, well, it will not take them to have, and what they have to do to
well,
conversation.
Combination with it as a major world, as a major world power, with a courtesy.
That's correct. There's certain sacrifices that have to be made to meet that responsibility, and they have to have both. You can't get it for nothing.
In other words, what you're saying is see what you have, and...
That's right, and take care of it. That you have to make. To maintain the situation under which you live now, it may be difficult, but it can be done.
It's the end of tape 3 after January 27th.